today on The Travel Guys.
In the travel news, the passenger counts for 2024 for our own Sacramento International Airport are in. And wow, pretty amazing. And Spirit Airlines says no to Frontier's second attempt at a merger. Those stories next in the news.
Real ID. We promised this would be in the news a lot between now and May 1st. Well, today we have an update on the May 1st deadline. It's in our Smarter Traveler segment at 11:25.
Are you a fan of airport lounges? Some people, like our reporter Clayton Whitehead, love them. Some of us, like me, could care less. We'll debate the value of airport lounges at 11:35.
Rick Steves was in town to speak at our public television station this week. We got a few minutes with him to talk travel. Stay with us. That interview at 11:50.
The best interviews, travel news you don't hear anywhere else, tips to make you a smarter traveler. Can all this be free? It is, right here on The Travel Guys.
On the road again.
Welcome, everyone. Welcome to another edition of the Travel and Entertainment Guys. Mark Hoffman and Tom Romano here with you. Thanks for coming along. Remember now, links to our special guests and more to make you a smarter traveler always at TravelGuysRadio.com. Mark, good to see you. It's been kind of a bumpy week, I should say, especially, our condolences go out to all of the lost souls in that horrible plane crash on what would have that been Wednesday evening?
Yeah, it really, how tragic. I guess it's a little bit consoling news to know that it's been 15 years since there was a crash involving a commercial air carrier in our country. You know, oftentimes we talk about near misses, but of course those are just that, near misses. And I guess every system would have some things like that, but when the investigation goes forward and we find out what happened, those who watched it on TV, I'm sure, helicopters don't fly into the side of airplanes normally. So something was definitely up there. Does this make you any reticent? Does it scare you or make you less likely to fly or anything like that?
Well, that's a good question. I think that's the question that goes through everyone's head, and particularly those people perhaps like yourself that fly more frequently. For me, no, not really. As you mentioned, the possibility is so rare. I'm more concerned about getting in my automobile and going anywhere. So not so much for me. How about you?
Well, I confess, no. The most dangerous part of your trip is the drive to the airport. You know, especially if you're taking the O-Dark 100 and you're on the road at 2:30 or 2:45 in the morning, when all the guys that just got out of the bars are, they say that's the most dangerous time of the day on the road. So, no, you're statistically, you're much more likely to get in an accident. You're more likely to fall down and hurt yourself in the airport than you are to get hurt on an airplane. So, no, it doesn't. But I'd like to know, like everyone else, I saw what happened. I'd like to know what happened. And I'd like somebody to reassure me that, however it happened, that there are systems in place to keep it from happening again. Preliminary reports are perhaps that, there wasn't enough staffing in the tower. We'll see. Some people have speculated and jumped to conclusions about where the responsibility might lie here. I'll tell you what, let's let the people who know what they're doing on this stuff have a few days to figure it out, because generally they do, and come back and tell us what happened. And as you mentioned, Tom, it doesn't help those lost souls on the helicopter or the airplane.
Yeah.
So my heart out to them and their families and stuff. And man, it got some figure skaters after the figure skating championships. How sad is that?
It's sad no matter who, but that one just kind of like, because a lot of those kids, we were watching the U.S. figure skating on TV just a week ago, and it really kind of touches home for a lot of folks. All right. We are the Travel and Entertainment Guys, and at the top of every Travel Guys radio show, we bring you up to date on the travel news. And as always, with it once again, here is Mark Hoffman.
our own airport set a passenger record last year. 13 million, according to the press release here, 13,634,838 passengers. By golly, if you wanted to know exactly how many. So over 13.5 million, it represents an increase of 5% from the previous year. They broke monthly passenger records multiple times. So all of this is why we need a new 5,000 car garage and some extra facilities out there. Fortunately, when they built Concourse B a number of years ago, somebody was thinking. Because, you know, Southwest has expanded a lot since then. And Alaska has expanded quite a bit. And there's still some space in that terminal. So there's still a little bit of room for us to expand some more. But they were just, for example, they were saying, you know, here's some of the new service. Alaska service to Tucson, Los Cabos, Orlando, and Puerto Vallarta. Those are all seasonal. And we told you a couple weeks ago they're going to go to Anchorage in the summer. Southwest goes to Baltimore and Tucson and Orlando, which they weren't doing before. By the way, the Southwest announcement came after Alaska Airlines announced that they were going to do Tucson. Somebody wasn't paying quite attention there to start with. Delta's got seasonal service to Detroit, JetBlue to Boston and New York seasonal. So there's a lot of options that there didn't used to be. So we are growing up as a city and as an airport, and good for Sacramento. There's going to be over 180 flights by summertime per day.
There you go.
I can remember when there was like 25, you know.
Well, we are a big city now by airport standards.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, listen, we talk occasionally about firearms on planes and people taking them on and how amazed we are that anybody could go to the airport with a gun in a bag and then say, oh, gosh, I didn't know that it was in there.
Right.
But I'll give you the benefit of the doubt if that happens. On TravelGuysRadio.com, our friends from Travelers United had sent out something. It has a live video on it. Know the TSA firearm travel rules for passengers on planes. So if you are considering taking a firearm on a plane, this video will tell you how to properly package it in your checked luggage so it will clear inspection and get through. So it's one thing for us to, you know, rag people who are, you know, dumb enough to have this happen to them, but here's a piece of information from Travelers United that might help you not be one of those people.
Well, this one is for making sure that the weapon is in your luggage that goes in the plane,
yes.
Not your carry-on.
The first thing, in fact, that they say on the video, I listened to it, the very first thing they say is, you know, before you start packing, look over the bag. Mm-hmm. Because so many people say, gosh, I didn't know it was in there. So they're saying, look, you know, look in the nooks and crannies. And I'm not sure why you had a gun in your suitcase to start with. But, you know, make sure that there's nothing in there. Heck, there could be a water bottle in there or something that could, you know, if you've got a carry-on bag, could hang you up. Anyways, that's at TravelGuysRadio.com, how to firearms travel rules for passengers on plane. Minnesota has introduced legislation to ban new billboards statewide. This is kind of interesting. I didn't know this. Minnesota would join Vermont, Maine, Hawaii, and Alaska, who have enacted similar bans. So if you travel in Vermont, Maine, Alaska, or Hawaii, you will not see any billboards by the side of the road.
Fascinating.
I'm taking a group to Hawaii next week. I'm going to watch the side of the road to see if I see any billboards. We mentioned in the headline, Spirit Airlines has received a second merger offer from Frontier, and like the first time, they've turned it down. I'm not sure that this is the end of this story. I think that the Spirit and Frontier will ultimately end up merging. I think what happened is that Spirit just wasn't crazy about the terms of the offer, and the country probably doesn't need two, and forgetting Allegiant for just a second, doesn't need three low-fare carriers. Their business model's a little broken, and people are willing to pay up. Not as many people are looking for that bare-bones airfare, so Frontier has already changed their business model considerably. I don't think we will be talking about Spirit Airlines at this time next year. United, however, we will be talking about. They have just become the first airline on the planet to fly 1,000 aircraft. Their latest Boeing 737 MAX 9 that they took delivery of gives them a mainline fleet of 1,000 airplanes. A mainline fleet, not the commuter flights, the smaller planes, 1,000 mainline planes. That's a lot of aircraft.
That is. You know what? They should equip them with the ability to drop water and loan them out to, all these northern and southern California places that that need planes dropping water.
I see. Or we can just turn the water back on.
That's right. I forgot about that. Yeah.
Airlines have added Super Bowl flights. American, Delta, Southwest, and United have all added flights to New Orleans from Philadelphia and Kansas City to accommodate fans of the Eagles and Chiefs who have paid a buttload, almost said something else, of money to go see that game in person. So congratulations to the fans who are going to New Orleans to see the game. It's a lot of money. I'll watch it on TV. Speaking of people who go places, tracking their dreams, like going to a Super Bowl, fans of Yellowstone and 1923, which is a Yellowstone prequel time according to a survey done by the University of Montana, $730 million on tourism last year, chasing the sites of those two programs. $730 million, that's a few bucks.
Wow.
Especially when you're out in the plains like that. I mean, what do they have, herds of people instead of herds of cattle?
Kind of. You know how we are. We become fixated with the landscape and the beauty and all the intrigue that goes with these TV shows that we fall in love with. Come on now, tell me you didn't want to, or you probably did, go and visit the location of where the TV show Bonanza took place.
Yeah, well, that's a good point. Good point. Listen,
closer.
I've been in Southern California. They filmed a lot of the mashed up stuff up in the area where the fires just were.
Yeah.
I might want to check on that. That's where MASH was filmed for 100 gazillion years. So, yeah, that's not unusual, I guess, that people – that's not the – as you point out, that's not the first time people have gone.
That's a lot of people, that's a lot of money, though.
A lot of people went in search of Mayberry many years ago. Flu season is here, in case you haven't noticed. I work in an office, and a number of folks have been under the weather, including myself here recently. What is the sickest state in the country, you ask?
Interesting. I read something recently, and it was it kind of went. There was kind of a back and forth. One of them said, "No, California has the lowest COVID." And then in that relationship, but then it also pointed out as California being one of the sickest. So is it California?
It's the flu bug. Right in both both instances, as you usually are. COVID counts in California are reasonably low. Mm-hmm. For throughout the country. On this particular survey, California is number one for being the sickest state in the country. It's this bug that's going around. You're blowing your nose constantly, and then you start coughing, and the cough stays for like 2 or 3 weeks after you feel fine. And the doc says, no, you're not contagious, but you're walking around with that horrible cough all the time. So make sure you cover up. Digital wallets have become increasingly popular in the travel world. More and more people are using them. 74% of travelers consider digital wallets essential. So I must be the one in four there who don't consider that, because here comes an article from our friend Chris Elliott, and I have posted this entire – it's part of his newsletter, so I posted the whole newsletter. I hope Chris doesn't get mad at me. He sells this. But consumer alert, beware of virtual wallets, and here's why. So Chris is telling people that airlines, one of their favorite moves is to say, we'll put your travel refund in a virtual wallet. And you can probably imagine how that goes.
You go to use the credits that are in this digital wallet that they produce for you, and there's nothing there, or it doesn't work.
You know what works really well? Cash.
Yeah.
If you owed me money and you sent me cash, I can buy anything I want with it. So that's the point here. Go to travelguysradio.com, and Chris explains why virtual wallets, when I saw the article that said 3 out of 4 people are using them, Chris has an instance here where somebody used one, didn't work out too well for him, and he has some tips on, and basically the bottom line tip is ask for cash.
Yeah.
19 million Americans will take cruises in 2025. That is a record. The coast off Florida remains the most popular destination. Miami is the busiest cruise port, followed by Port Canaveral and Port Everglades. And having been in Miami recently, I can tell you that is absolutely the case. If you're a hiker in Southern California, you like to hike in Southern California, make sure you do your homework before you go back down there again, because the fires have destroyed a lot of the hiking trails in the foothills there above Pacific Palisades. L.A. continues its 2028 Olympic preparations. Nothing has changed because of the wildfires for that. United Airlines is offering passengers a more detailed ground view. If you're flying United Airlines, hit that TV screen and take a look for it. And when we come back, we're going to talk about the real ID, and that's your travel news for today.
And we are Mark and Tom. Once again, check us out at TravelGuysRadio.com and check out Rudy's Hideaway if you're putting on a crab feed. This is crab feed season. And then maybe if you missed out on using Rudy's for getting their crab for your crab feed. And I am talking about bulk. You know, you need 100 pounds of crab, or maybe even more. Check out Rudy's Hideaway. Go there and talk to Steve, and he'll hook you up with a really good deal to save you some money on that crab feed. And if you're looking for a good meal, you can stop by Rudy's on Thursdays. Get their one-pound Maine lobster on sale for $28.95, or on Mondays, they've got a whole bunch of choices for a dinner for two for $65, which includes all of the trimmings. So our place to go, and maybe yours too, give them a try. Rudy's Hideaway, easy to find, right off of Highway 50 and Hazel. Mark and Tom, the travel and entertainment guys, brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. Thanks for tuning in. We're here every Saturday from 11 to 12. Of course, podcasts available at TravelGuysRadio.com as well as iHeartRadio. Well, okay, Mark, let's get going. You teased us. I'm guessing that they've changed their mind. They're not going to do the real ID on May 1st, are they?
I waited as we went through the fall. I waited to bring this up on the program and try to install some sense of urgency in people, because I'm like, they're going to put this off again. I sense they're going to put this off again. But they said, no, that's not going to happen. And then TSA came out and said a couple weeks ago, no, there aren't going to be any extensions. Well, kind of, sort of, probably. It's like, you know, when you ask your kid if they did something bad and they say, well, not exactly. That's kind of what we got here. They are going, the May 5th deadline for a real ID, it turns out, is going to be a soft deadline. What's going to happen is, starting May the 7th, if you have an ID, many states have been issuing real IDs for a while. It requires an extra measure of security questions and stuff like that. The idea is that we're making it safer for people to get onto airplanes, and eliminating people who, you know, terrorists have been quoted as that their airplane ticket is their terrorism. So we're trying to make sure that bad people don't get airline tickets when they're not supposed to. That's what this is all about. Here, I will read to you what Travelers United said this week. The real ID deadline is less than 4 months away, kind of. The real ID soft deadline is about 4 months away, but the real ID deadline is actually 2 years away in 2027. The Department of Homeland Security is allowing TSA to use a two-year phase-in approach to the hard deadline on May 5, 2027, when you will be required to use a real ID compliant identification to board a commercial aircraft in the U.S. or you won't fly. Because barely half of the U.S. driver's licenses are real ID compliant, they're going to phase this in because, as we speculated, and California is a state where we're not compliant yet. So many of us, people like you and I, would have to make an extra trip. And as this time period gets shorter, there are going to be a lot of people who are going to have to crunch in at the last minute. So they felt that that it would cause some serious problems and some people wouldn't be able to fly in May. And I agree with them. That's exactly what would have happened. and you would have had people panic-stricken in April when they realized that they had to have this and they hadn't done it yet. So what's going to happen is on May the 7th of this year, the TSA is going to start telling you you're a bad person. You don't have the right ID. And on the May the 5th, 2027, this will not get you on an airplane in the United States. So may I just make a kind suggestion to the listeners of this program? Be part of the solution and not part of the problem. Go get it done now so that you don't have to wait 2 years for it and then it's done. And to those of you who have already done it, congratulations, you've got one step up on the rest of us. And what I plan to do here in a few weeks is I will apply for my real ID on the program. So you can, we'll set it up and tell you when it's coming ahead of time, and we'll walk you through the steps of getting a real ID, and then you'll always have it or have the recording on the podcast, and you'll always know what the real ID rules are. If you missed the beginning of this, the TSA told us that the deadline was hard, but the Department of Homeland Security, which apparently gets to overrule TSA, says that the real ID thing is a soft ID, and they won't actually ban you from getting on a plane until May the 7th of 2027. Reason, and remember, even if you don't have a driver's license, if you're someone who has never driven, or you don't, you know, for some reason you don't drive, too old, you got a DUI, whatever, your ID has to be a real ID. So that's another one. You know, there are no exceptions to this, but once again, remember, this rule was passed back in 2006, 2007, when memories of 9/11 were still in our brains. But still, I'm not saying this is a bad idea. Really, requiring people to have a lot of security to get on an airplane is a good idea.
We're going places with Ned's Points Leisure Flair, a world of adventure, and we take you there.
Two very different adventures from Sports Leisure Vacations coming up this spring. Have you ever been to Japan? Japan for the culturally curious, an 11-day trip to Japan visiting four different Japanese cities, leaves on May the 21st. And if you don't want to go all the way to Japan and you want something fun close to home, US 50, the Lincoln Highway, America's loneliest road. We're going to travel across Nevada on America's loneliest road in early June. Japan and the Lincoln Highway, America's loneliest road. Go to sportsleisure.com for more details.
Hey there, Mark and Tom, the travel and entertainment guys, brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. As we mentioned in our tease, we were going to talk about airport lounges with Clayton Whitehead, who is a frequent traveler and a partner of Mark's at Sports Leisure Vacations. I did a little research. I understand that 57% of frequent flyers visit airport lounges when they travel. It doesn't say how often, but so we're going to do a point counterpoint today, my friends, as Clayton is a fan of airport lounges, and we'll find out why, and Mark, not so much. So let's get started. Clayton, welcome to the program today.
Thanks, Mark and Tom. It's great to be here.
Well, all right, let's start with you. Tell me a little bit about airport lounges. Why don't you explain to listeners who've never been in one what they can expect and how you get in one, and what do they have there?
Well, here domestic in the United States, I guess the three main contenders would be the United Club for United Flyers, the Delta, what they call that, the Sky Lounge?
Sky Club.
For Delta Flyers, and then the Admirals Club, I believe it's called, for American Flyers. I'm a United guy, so all my stock is in the United Club. But I first got turned on to the clubs a number of years ago, back in the last century, when I used to fly Delta a lot more frequently. Back in those days, if you showed your travel agent credentials, you could get into the clubs for free. So that's when I first kind of got an appetite for the clubs. But I've been a member of the United Club now for probably 10 years. And I am a big fan of it. I like having a place to go where I know there's going to be room and comfortable seating, where I can have Wi-Fi, clean bathrooms, and food and drink. The drinks are free-flowing. The food is pretty good. And I like the chance to get away from the crowds in the terminal and enjoy the higher level of hospitality.
Ooh, me next.
Okay, Mark, you're next.
Get away from the crowds. Have you ever been in one of those clubs? It's like it's like when people gather at the gate when they make the first boarding call, you know, when they all kind of huddle around. That's what it looks like in a club. Plus, do you always get in? I mean, sometimes there are lines outside and stuff. Like, I get two passes a year and they look at me and say, no, you can't come in with that.
Well, you have to know the secrets of the club.
Oh, how much does this club cost you every year?
Well, I think it's worth it.
That's a great answer.
Let everybody know. I've got a few secrets here.
Uh-huh.
Club membership for the average Joe, I believe, is $600 a year.
Right.
You can also get in with miles. However, the more you travel, which means the more you use the club,
right,
the less it costs. Mm-hmm. That is to say, the higher up you are in the airline's premier program, the less it costs, which seems counterintuitive because it seems like if you used it more, you should pay more. But it's the other way around.
So you have a 57-minute layover, and you're going from B2 to C27, and you're going to make it into the club. The plane starts boarding 30, 35 minutes before it leaves. So you're going to take that time, and you're going to go to the club, get something to eat, relax, probably pee, you know, whatever else that you have to do between flights. And that's worth $600 a year.
I am absolutely going to do that, yes. But I will say that I specifically look for flights with longer layovers. One, because that hedges your bet against a late flight,
mm-hmm,
a late first segment at least. But two, it means I'm going to have some time in the club, and
right,
I enjoy the clubs. But I should say it's not all frivolous. You were talking about the price before. Let me get back to that. Mm-hmm. For the United, now this is United I'm talking about.
Right, for pretzels and cheap food.
$600 a year. However, if you do a corporate membership through your company's name, only $450 a year.
Oh, wow. So how many times do you say you wouldn't go into the club? Maybe 15 or 20?
I go into the club, no, more than that, because okay, I fly. I'm in airports 4, 8, 10 days a month.
Tom, I just don't get this club thing.
Wait.
He's like dedicated to it.
But there's more.
Uh-huh.
And it's a big more.
Uh-huh.
There's more. When something goes wrong,
mm-hmm,
you know, like when everybody at the same exact moment gets the announcement and the being on their phone that their flight has just been canceled,
uh-huh,
and in the flash of an eye, there's 130 people in line at the service counter, you go to the club, there's not 130 people in line there. There's dedicated service people. Oh, and by the way, it isn't a QR code, and it isn't an AI, and it isn't get on your phone. You go into the club, there's a service desk with real humans behind it, who have a lot of knowledge of the system, who have a lot of compassion, who know that you know, they know your status level because you're standing in front of them.
That's the first legitimate reason that you've given for paying for a club membership.
Okay.
Is if something goes wrong, then they can make it right quickly. I don't see if you had a 3-hour layover, I can see it. But, you know, I just find an empty gate. And, you know, I go and get bad food that, you know, from the concession stand, and which comes out of the same kitchen as the food in your club.
Oh, yeah. And buy your $5 bottle of water.
Yeah.
Get it for free.
Oh, well, I use the terminal thing. And then I just sit there and I'm relaxed and nobody bothers me and I don't have to get in a line. And, you know, using the empty gate A27 doesn't cost you anything.
Well, there's that. If that's really what you want to do with your life.
Well, you know, I can see both of your points that, you know, for some people it's a great thing. Others, not so much. But let me kind of like jump in the middle of that conversation. As you pointed out, Clayton, you bother to get flights that have longer layovers so you can specifically enjoy the clubs. The question I might have is how many airports have clubs that are what I would call decent enough or exciting enough to want to do layovers? Can you name some specific ones that
this is going to be fun
that appeal to you?
No, this is fine. Again, I'm a United flyer, so I find myself mostly laying over in their hubs, which would be Houston and Denver and Newark and Dulles, and if I happen to be westbound, maybe Hawaii or Los Angeles. I mean, I'm sorry, not Hawaii, San Francisco or Los Angeles, I meant to say. So the hubs have the biggest clubs and the nicest clubs, but then there are also really nice clubs in other airports. Of course, I fly in and out of Atlanta a lot, as that's my home. And Atlanta has a very small United Club, but it's well appointed, has a great staff. I'm in there a lot, so I've gotten to know them. And in fact, the last time I was there, I got the little ping saying that my flight was going to be 4 hours late, which meant I wasn't going to make my connection. And literally within 5 minutes, I had been reticketed for a new flight, upgraded first class too, which wasn't a bad thing. My bags had been redirected, and I was sitting back in my chair enjoying Prosecco.
Okay. I'm looking at the six reasons why people go to lounges. And okay. One of them I pointed out, I'm questionable, and it says it's a family-friendly place to be.
Oh, now, no. There's children there? Small children in the lounge that I paid hundreds of dollars to be? Can this be true?
Well, I'm not a good person to talk on this subject. I don't have any experience. But I'll just say that going in and seeing a family with a bunch of kids is kind of like, it's kind of like when a family with a bunch of kids sits in the row behind you on the plane or in the theater or wherever you happen to be. Yeah, you kind of go, oh. But then you can shoot to the other side of the room. It's a big place.
Uh-huh. Oh, and they're always empty. So, I mean, there's plenty of space and everything. Seriously, though, Clayton, the airlines must be making money off of these things because they're throwing up new or expanded clubs just about as fast as they can. So it's to your point, you know, you're a loyal United flyer. Obviously, the existence of these clubs makes you a more loyal United flyer.
Yeah, and United especially must see the value of these, mm-hmm. whether real or perceived, because they are ripping apart almost everyone in the system, or it has just been ripped apart and modernized, expanded, redone. One of the advantages of United membership is that it's good throughout the Star Alliance. So I'm flying internationally, I pop into the Lufthansa lounge or the South African Air Lounge.
Now he's name dropping.
Name dropping.
Lufthansa International Lounge. Mm-hmm. Some of us poor domestic travelers, you know, we don't know anything about any of that sort of stuff. So do they like give you a crown and put a robe over you?
Legitimate or? Case in point.
Okay.
A year and a half ago, I'm with a whole group in Chicago. We are trying to get to Edinburgh, and boom, just like that, our flight was canceled. And it was a wide-body plane. So how many fit on a wide-body? 240 people, I believe. It was, I mean, a full flight, and it got canceled because of a mechanical. And I walked to the lounge, and within a few minutes, the lady there had groups on the phone. And it was after hours, but she knew a person to call who was a personal friend. She had his personal number. And at like 10 o'clock at night, Chicago time, I was in the lounge. I was not having Prosecco. I was actually about to have a nervous breakdown. But somebody was helping me. A live person was helping me. And my entire group left on the first flight the next morning. I dare say not everybody on that flight was on the first flight the next morning.
No. Well, damn, that's another good point that he just made. You know, overpriced, bad food, can't get in. But if you're in a jam, why then, you know, and if you're in a jam and it gets you someplace that you're going, especially if you've got 20 or 30 people in tow, why then, just excuse me while I go over, I'm going to go over online and sign up for my United Club membership now, and I'll be back. Clayton.
Well, they are very picky, so good luck with that.
Now, they have there is something called an airport lounge day pass. Okay. And so it's
good
just,
luck with those.
Yeah,
good luck with those because all the Claytons of the world, they get in. But all of those people with the day passes, United sends me two a year. I've tried to use them three or four times. And they're like, oh, we're so sorry, sir, but that's a day pass. And we're kind of full right now. We're not accepting
those. Wow, really?
So it's like the Claytons of the world get in and the Marks of the world don't. And
but to Tom's point, there are some franchises, if that's quite the right word, some mm-hmm. chains maybe is the right word,
yeah.
of lounges that are now coming on the scene that are not airline affiliated.
Well, American Express, they have in some markets, Centurion
lounges. So these are places that are available by membership and or because you have a certain type of credit card. So, you know, it all depends on your travel plans. If you're a frequent traveler, you know where you are most of the time. Look around and see what's there. Mm-hmm. And then you can decide for yourself if it's a good deal for you.
There we have it, my friends. Point and counterpoint to airport lounges. Are they worth it? Are they not? You decide. Hey there, it's Mark Hoffman and Tom Romano. We are the Travel and Entertainment Guys, brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. Thanks for coming along. Remember now, links to our special guests can be found at TravelGuysRadio.com. Mark, we've visited with this gentleman once before. Tell folks who he is, if they don't know by now, and what we're going to talk about.
Rick Steves was in town this week. Rick, I'm always a little bit of at a quandary of what to call you. A travel expert, I guess, would be kind of a fair name.
Most people call me travel guru, G-U-R-U. I don't know why.
Travel
guru.
Where came okay.
From. Travel guru. How's that?
Anyway, no, Rick Steves was in.
I teach people how to travel.
All right, that's fair enough. Rick was in town for an event at KVIE the other night. And so how did your presentation go with the public television station? I know you were talking for a while, a little bit different format than you usually do.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's kind of what I do is just teach people how to travel. And, you know, when people ask me who takes my tours, who reads my books, I like to say it's PBS demographics. That's my favorite, the favorite kind of people I'd like to travel with. You know, people of all different ages who are young at heart and curious and interested in getting out of their comfort zone and learning about the world.
You do a lot of supporting of public television. Why should people consider supporting public television?
You know, ever since I was a kid, I don't know why it is, but I've always had an appreciation of good journalism, good quality programming. I've had the sense that media shapes people's worldviews. And I think a big part of how educated and savvy our electorate is determined by what is the quality of the media that they consume. When you travel, you don't want to build walls all around you. You want to build bridges. And that's a beautiful souvenir for me. And I think when I support public broadcasting, I think it's good citizenship.
I like to tell people on our tours, Rick, that the best travelers come from public television. People who watch PBS tend to be the most inquisitive and the best people to travel with on the road. Speaking of travel, a lot of destinations now, one of the big words in our industry has become the word over-tourism. And many destinations, right, local people are fighting back, and lots of people like myself and yourself are telling people, you know, try to go during a non-peak season, maybe try to go to a little different destination. Can I get your thoughts on the subject of over-tourism and where that might be headed?
Yeah, as the world becomes more affluent, more and more people are traveling, and more and more people are going to the same places just because, you know, there's this Instagram sort of mania where everybody wants to go to the same spot for the same photograph. There's bucket list stuff. There's TripAdvisor and crowdsourcing and what's the most popular place. And it becomes a self-fulfilling kind of whirlpool prophecy, and everybody ends up in the same places complaining about the crowds. I see that in Europe. People are going to the most popular few places, oblivious to the alternatives, and they go in the most crowded times. When I give a talk, I always say there's two IQs of travelers, those who wait in lines and those who do not wait in lines. If you're waiting in a line, you put yourself there, and I can generally get around the lines just by being smart in my scheduling. Why would I go to the Acropolis in Athens during the hours that all the cruisers are on shore? Go early or go late, and you'll have the place to yourself. But if you go in the middle of the day, it's going to be hot and it's going to be crowded. I would say, you guys, that one thing is in Europe, there's this news that they're throwing, you know, tomatoes at tourists, or they're squirting them with squirt guns because they don't like them. That's not all tourists. That's the bad kind of tourist. And if I lived in Barcelona, or if I lived in Venice, or if I lived in Amsterdam, the bad kind of travelers are the ones that stampede in off the cruise ship, or the big mass tourism. And they don't spend the night. They don't have a nice dinner. They don't have a very thoughtful approach to their travels. Those of us who are independent travelers that spend the night and buy a dinner and are curious and have a thoughtful visit, we're still appreciated because we're part of the economy. We butter their bread.
We're talking with Rick Steves. Rick was in town at a KVIE special event this week. And before he left town, he spent a little bit of time with us. Rick, I have a hypothetical question here. It kind of sort of spins off of your previous answer there. The best thing about people traveling around the planet is?
the best thing about people traveling around the planet is they get to know their neighbors. I love the idea of getting out there and getting to know the other 96% of humanity, especially with the political environment that we live in the United States right today. You know, now, there's a lot of people who really don't have a worldview. Their worldview is shaped by fear-mongering commercial TV news, and they can be easily taken advantage of by people that want to upend our democracy and scare us into a world where we're all just worried that somebody's going to get us. I really believe that there's a huge value in our peace and in our stability if we get to know people outside of our borders. But for me, the whole idea is I can learn more about my home by leaving it and looking at it from a distance. And in my travels, I don't try to avoid culture shock. I see culture shock as a constructive thing. It's the growing pains of a broadening perspective, and it just needs curation. And that's what I like to do as a travel writer and a tour organizer and a TV host, is to curate people's travel experience so they come home with that wonderful souvenir about, you know, just being more friends with the other 96% of humanity.
And that's why I will tell you, Rick, that when traveling in rural Nevada, we take an afternoon before the establishment opens and take everybody inside a bordello so that they can see something that they haven't seen before. Remember, before it opens. But anyway, that's a little more humorous look. But yes, anytime you can go someplace and meet people. You know, it's funny, Rick, how politically we have these big divides, but yet when I get out on the road and I'm traveling and I'm meeting people and stuff like that, the conversation generally doesn't start off or have anything to do with politics.
You're so right. You're so right. Yeah. The more you travel, the more you realize, hey, we're all in this together.
One last question before we let you go. You've been a lot of places. You take groups of people places. You talk about travel on a regular basis. Your favorite place to take people?
And the favorite place to go, I would say, is wherever your travel dreams are taking you. A lot of people, you know, they ask, what's the best place now to go? But the question doesn't make any sense to me. Any place is good if you've got an interest in going there. If you've got Norwegian relatives, that's where you want to go. If you're interested in World War II history, you can go to Normandy. If you love art, you can go to Paris and Florence. If you love the ancient world, go to Greece. If you love amazing food, you know, you can go to the country where you want to enjoy the produce. I think the mark of a good traveler is knowing how to get the most out of their sightseeing and the most out of their experience. And I'm really into this idea that the more understanding you bring to your sightseeing, the more rewarding that sightseeing will be. And also that, you know, if you equip yourself with good information and expect yourself to travel smart, you will. Europe is my beat. My mission, we like to joke in our office, is to equip and inspire Americans to venture beyond Orlando. And for me, Europe is the first step. It's the springboard into being a globetrotter. And for a lot of us, that's a great life.
Beyond Orlando. Rick, thank you very much for taking some time with us today. And also thank you for coming to town and supporting our hometown PBS station. As someone who falls into that same category, I appreciate it. Thank you. Safe travels, my friend.
Great to be here, and bon voyage.
If you haven't had a chance to catch Rick Steves on PBS in his program, take some time out of your day and do so. He's a fascinating guy, and we are very, very fortunate to have him spend a little bit of time here with us on The Travel Guys.
We are. And boy, I'll tell you what, that Mr. Whitehead, he put up a pretty good argument for his lounges, didn't he? Because all the arguments in the world until he got to, you know what? You get stuck, and now there's somebody to help you. And if you get stuck, that makes all the difference in the world. Thanks for coming along with us today. A wide variety of things hopefully make you a smarter traveler. We'll see you next Saturday at 11 o'clock. In the meantime, dance like nobody is watching.
Traveler is always leaving town. We never